Ulrich is a chain-smoking, tough-as-nails investigative journalist for the New York City newspaper, The Daily Bugle. Lois Lane is an award-winning, tough-as-nails reporter for the Metropolis newspaper, The Daily Planet. Chris Hoffman is not. He's the guy we got on a podcast. It's time for the Lane Ulrich Report with extra special correspondent, Chris Hoffman.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Lane Urich Report. This is your intrepid gumshoe reporter, Chris Hoffman, with the pulse of indie comic book out theres. And today I am very lucky to have a couple of guests here from Unlikely Heroes Studios. My two guests today are Dee Fish, who is a Pennsylvania-based cartoonist, illustrator and graphic designer, and who has worked on one of several comics where she has worked on stories for Telos. I absolutely love the Perhaponauts. I am a huge fan.
Get out.
And so I publish an indie comic called The Salt City Strangers, which is a set of superheroes that are in Salt Lake City, so it's a local interest comic. And the Perhaponauts Hoax Hunters were two books that I took a lot of inspiration from.
Oh, awesome.
And there's actually a Bigfoot in the Salt City Strangers. I'll talk to you a little bit about that, but also worked on Mice Templars for Image Comics and another one of my huge favorites, Atomic Robo. I absolutely love Atomic Robo. So I am, these are great. I'm thrilled to, I mean, just, I'm geeking out here because I'm a bit of a fan. And we also have Sarah White, who is a graphic artist and helps out a lot with the lettering on some of the comics, and also works on marketing, letting everybody know about the cool comics over at Unlikely Heroes. So welcome, Dee, and welcome, Sarah. Thank you so much for taking time with me today.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah, of course. So the big thing that we're going to be talking about and we'll keep coming back to here is that you have a Kickstarter that is live at the time of this recording for Finding Dee Volume 1. Can you tell our listeners, give them a little primer on what Finding Dee is about?
Okay. Should I take this one, Sarah?
You bet.
Okay. Well, Finding Dee, it's a webcomic that I've been doing since 2017. It's a semi-autobiographical comic strip about the trials and tribulations of what it's like when you're trying to, you know, break into comics, make a name for yourself, pay the bills and do all that stuff while you're also coming out as transgender in your 40s. So it's kind of a slice of life comic strip where it runs once a week, runs every Wednesday.
Wow. That's, yes, super dedication. A lot of the success in a webcomic is wrapped up in consistency, mm-hmm. right? Like, you really have to make sure that, like, when you tell people it's going to be out every week, there's a lot of there's an expectation of that. How do you keep up with a timeline like that?
Stress, just lots of stress. You mainline it. I have like a lot of web cartoonists. I have a day job, so when I'm not working on my day job, I'm either working on Finding Dee, freelance work. I'm also the illustrator of another webcomic called Giant Girl Adventures that I do with a friend of mine, Sabrina, who that's her creation. She writes it. So I draw that. That comes out every Friday. I'm working on a series of werewolf novels, and I'm breaking from working right now to do this interview.
Nice.
I have stuff to do. I have too many things to do. I don't know how to turn off.
That's great. But there's no off switch.
No, but there's plenty of strips about me having no off switch. So it gives me material. So it's all right. About my life.
That's pretty great. So how long did it take for you to find like your audience? Was it something that kind of happened right away, or did it grow over time?
It's been a kind of a steady growth, but the audience picked up on it very, very quickly from the earliest strips. I've told the story a few times now, but it began as a blog, just a written blog that I'm at Finding Dee, and it was just me writing about the everyday crap that was happening. I live in a small rural Pennsylvania town. It's fairly conservative, and so it stuck out like a sore thumb. And so when I would have a negative experience of somebody giving me, you know, shit eye somewhere, or, you know, giving me a hard time about the bathrooms, all the things that you hear about in the media, unfortunately, which have only been getting worse and worse and worse since I literally came out in 2016, which was like the firestorm when all this stuff became the media story, the national, I became the national boogeyman that, you know, when I came out. So I'd write about that in the blog, and just about the stresses of, you know, especially in the early days when you're still trying to find your voice and find, you know, finding D. But the blog was really, really negative. Very quickly, I discovered that I wasn't writing. I was just bitching. I was bitching and venting. And I'm the kind of person, there are some people that they bitch and vent and they put that stuff down on paper. It makes them feel better. It ramps me up. It makes me feel worse. It makes me feel more anxiety and more stress. Pardon. And then I find the next time I go out, I'm expecting it more, and I'm girding my loins. And I've personally found that when you're walking out there looking, when you go out into the world looking for conflict, you will find it. So I, on top of that, I'd been a cartoonist for years. I'd been doing a online comic since 2001 called Dandy and Company that I was still doing at the time. And I'd have so many people that were friends of mine after I'd come out saying, oh, are you going to do a comic about that? Are you going to do a comic about that? You should do a comic about that, you know? Why don't you make a comic about your transition? And so eventually I kind of took the two ideas and was like, fine, I'm going to do a fucking comic about that, which is actually the first comic strip I did, is people saying you should do a comic. And they go, fine, I'm going to do a fucking comic. Ooh, fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck, fuck. I can curse in this one. Because all my other comics were all ages. So I was like, nope, this one's about me and I curse. So I started making it as a comic strip, and the idea being is that instead of a blog as a comic strip, if I'm always focused on trying to find a punchline, what's the humor in this situation? What's the humor in that bad experience or that thing that otherwise was stressful? Then I can find humor in it in the comic strip. Maybe it will help me in the real world. It started off as therapy. It wasn't even something I was thinking was going to be a, like, I'll do a few of these and see if people like them, but I was doing them for myself as kind of therapy, which is why I just kind of made up the art style as I started. I didn't, like, sit down like I normally would and be like, I'm going to make model sheets and all that. It's very, very created on the fly. And so in this first book, you can really see from beginning to end that there is a big artistic curve as I'm figuring out the styles. But that's kind of how it started. And I found out really early on, within the first couple of weeks, people were reacting. The numbers weren't huge. They were steady, but they were growing. But I was getting more interaction when I'd post a strip as opposed to my other work. With the other stuff, you get a like and somebody would, you know, put a ha-ha emoji on there. But with the Finding D stuff, I was having a lot of people interacting with me through it, saying, you know, that's just like an experience I had. And I started touching upon things that I was expressing that were, for me, new experiences coming out, you know, as a transgender woman, that were just what I discovered, just universal experiences. And that's what the strip kind of became. It became a chronicle of the fact that, you know, for all of the controversy surrounding this and all of the media frenzy that has been around this, it's just about me living my life and being able to express that and connect with people about that. And I feel like I really wandered off your question, but I do that from time to time.
No, not at all. No, not at all. No, that's fascinating. Like you said, it seems like there's a lot of, like, universal truths. I heard a guy on TikTok say, like, that the best songs are three chords and the truth, right? And it feels like comics are, especially like a semi-biographical one like yours, is your truth, right? Yeah. Like, you're getting a chance to show it to people, and I think an opportunity for a lot of people to see that it is, that there are a lot of experiences that are very similar.
Yeah, I think most stories, most media, you know, when it comes from a place of truth, is when it connects with people, no matter what that scenario is, no matter how over the top or crazy that concept might be. The ones that seem to connect with people are the ones that do come from some place of truth to them in their core. you know, movies, comics, whatever. It's the ones that have that truth to them that mm-hmm. people seem to go, yes, and they connect and they become these things that last for generations.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Has there been any topics that had to do with like your transitions that were like a little bit more painful or like you felt like took a little bit more explaining or that were a little bit harder, harder to do than others?
Absolutely. There are strips that, and since then I've learned for my own well-being to not do. I kind of early on, so just before I came out, I was working in an office that was very stifling, and I'm not going to go into details. It was the worst job of my life. I had to quit because I was having chest pains going into work every day. And I ended up going freelance, just trying to save myself from having a freaking heart attack going into work. And because at the time, my boss at the time was extremely negative about us having personal lives. So like I created a separate Facebook just for his benefit. Because he'd see me doing working on a comic strip or saying I'm going to a convention or I built my website, and he'd be like, well, why aren't you spending more time working on my projects and getting my stuff done? And it was so like, fine, I'm going to block him from my regular page and let him see my fake page. Well, when I transitioned, when I quit the job, I ignored that page entirely. So about a year into my transition, Facebook said, hey, here's a Facebook recommendation, and it's my other profile. So Facebook's trying to make me make friends with myself, but my old self. And so I was like, that's a strip idea. Talking with yourself. You know, what would it be like if you friended that other account and you could actually have that chat with your pre-transition self? What do you tell them? Mm-hmm. In doing so, a few things I reminded myself of. My pre-transition self was a asshole. My pre-transition self had a lot of sarcastic backtalk for everything, a lot of defense mechanisms, and I was writing them. And I was giving my pre-transition mentality a voice. And I discovered after a few strips that it was massive amounts of anxiety to write those strips and draw those strips with pre-transition me. I try not to do that anymore. I took a character from one of my other strips, this little demon named Skeezix, and I turned him into the demon of my insecurities, who'd come up and tell me all, you know, you'll never fit in, you're never going to be good enough, you're never going to be a real woman, and a lot of creatively, oh, no one cares about your work, your writing sucks, blah, 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 you know. And I had to stop using that character as well, because I discovered when I give a voice to my anxieties, when I take those little crappy voices in my head and give them a platform, it does not go well for me, because then I start internalizing it and I start dwelling on it again. And I'm like, that's the opposite of being good for me. There's a lot of things talking about dysphoria issues of, you know, early on in the strip, there are certain things that since then I've had, like, you know, I've had laser hair removal surgery, other things like that have lessened my day-to-day dysphoria. But in the earlier days, you know, I'd have to shave every single day and then use makeup tips to conceal it, so I would feel comfortable leaving the house until I could get all these things done. But then, you know, there are the days where it just does not help, or you have to plaster so much makeup on your face to go out of the house that, you know, you just feel ridiculous. And I would do strips where I would kind of be, you know, bemoaning that idea. And those would be the strips, ironically, that would get the most negative attention, where people who were looking for an excuse to say, ha, see, you're fake. You're all just, you know, you're all just a bunch of predators and pedophiles, and you're, you know, you'll never be a real woman. And all, whenever I would do a strip that would be me literally kind of talking about my own insecurities over my appearance, for example, it brings them out of the woodwork. And I kind of stopped doing a lot of those, because I got really, really tired of having to filter through my messages and block 40 people because they were spreading. They would share my strip on their, you know, weird little hateful blogs as proof of the menace that we represent. And so, yeah, there's a level of honesty that I found I need to pull back from a little bit. just to sell, to protect myself. Because it isn't, I'm not doing this as a, you know, this isn't just a big autobiographical book that I'm putting out there that I'm trying to make a serious piece. It's a comedy piece. I wanted to do a comic strip. That's my favorite medium. And so I wanted to keep it funny and I wanted to keep it beneficial to myself. And I'm, again, like I said earlier, I'm not good at being that person who puts their angst down on the page to make themselves feel better, because it gives me the exact opposite result. So, yeah, there are a few things. And also when it comes to other people, real people in the world, there's basically two supporting characters in the strip. My partner, Heidi, and our dog, because, yeah, my everyone tells me, yeah, oh, use me in the strip. Use me in the strip. Oh, you say that now, but I'll piss you off sooner or later. And so I just kind of, I'm like, you know what? A lot of my favorite trips, Calvin and Hobbes made it with literally only six characters tops. Seven. A lot of comic strips can get by with very few supporting characters. You just imply the existence of the rest of the world very well. I found that it's a bit of a challenge, but like, I can talk about work issues, but I just got home from work. Or other people can be off panel, like Charlie Brown's teacher. You never see Miss Othmar, and you never see the people that I work with. And I just find it's lot easier that way. It saves me from the aggravation. It's like, maybe I'll start, you know, bitching more about, you know, work issues when I'm making enough money on this trip that I have a day job. But even good-natured, light-hearted ribbing can piss people off if you don't do it right. And I don't want to be the person that hurts people either. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this because I want to make other people angry or anything like that.
Right. No, that's really cool. I've always seen like comic books were an outsider's thing back in the day, right? Like it was you got in trouble for liking superheroes or Dungeons and Dragons or a lot of the things that are a lot more mainstream now.
Yeah.
And so, what do you think makes like the But it's still now I see there that there's like still cultures around comic books and around like web comics and in like cosplay communities and like furry communities and stuff that are a lot of those have sort of taken the outsider status of the early comic books. Right. So what do you think it is about like the comics that make it so that it's kind of a medium for outsiders?
That's a dark
or do you think it is? Am I just seeing something here that's not there?
I think it's a medium for outsiders. I think it has become a medium for outsiders. I don't think it's okay. This is a thoughtful one. I got to turn my brain on.
Okay.
I think that it evolved into a medium for outsiders during the periods in which it was very hyper-focused on one or two genres, on superheroes. I mean, when I was growing up, late 70s, early 80s, comics were superheroes or Archie or the newspaper funnies. The newspaper funnies and the regular mainstream comics do not cross over at all. You were not allowed to be a fan of one or the other. As a general rule, we're very much into tribalism as a people. We do love to point out the other and say, bad. You're not as cool as us. Yeah, whatever. But I think that we all started to grow up, and then something weird happened in the 80s, started in the 70s and definitely took root in the 80s, where our generation said, we're not growing out of this in a blanket statement. We're not going to follow that advice of saying, you know, now you're an adult now, you grow out of this. And the publishers realized that, and they started selling to us as we were aging. So, you know, a Spider-Man comic from when I was a little kid is nothing like a Spider-Man comic today in terms of writing style, tone, maturity level of the content, all that stuff. The medium the medium around the genres started growing up, and the medium started growing up as well. More graphic novels, more indie books, more things. You know, you had your Love and Rockets and Why I Hate Anything Kyle Baker Does. You had all these wonderful comics that were coming out that were not about all these, you know, the medium was growing up. And it's a similar thing to like what Guillermo del Toro has been saying recently in promotions of his Pinocchio. You know, animation's not a genre, it's a medium. You know, it's just a storytelling medium. It depends on what you choose to tell with it. We just became very ingrained as a culture, and we do this for a lot of things. Everything is what we want it to be. Like, cartoons are for kids. To this day, I mean, if you look at the box office, the only animated movie that was aimed at an action-adventure audience that's made anything resembling money has been the most recent Spider-Verse movie, and that's still the lowest-grossing Spider-Man film in one of the most successful franchises in film history. But it's a cartoon. And they marketed it as a comedy. I'm very curious to see what the sequel is going to do, because they're not marketing it as a comedy. So far, they're marketing it very straightforward. This is an adventure story. This is an action comic book style story. Even the MCU, I think it's one of the reasons they lean so heavily on their comedy, is because we're still kind of trained to not take it seriously. We equate it with it's childish and we're not going to admit to liking it. And there's always that inherent it's for kids mentality. It's drawn pictures. It's not real art. And culturally, we have not gotten past that yet. And I think part of the problem there is that in some cases, it's because while the characters are all super popular now, it's not because of the comics, it's because of the movies. Movies are different, and they're the real movies. They're the live actor movies, and so they're serious. And, you know, which is why we end up with a lot of things that we're now reaching a zone where they're getting so much further away from what they actually are in order to break through that stigma. You get things like the Christopher Nolan Batman films, which are wonderful movies, but I will always contend they're not really Batman movies. He's barely in them. They're these cool crime movies that happen to feature a guy in a Batman costume. We have the most recent Joker, which is like just a Martin Scorsese movie that happens to have makeup at the end. And they're getting further and further away. Sometimes the Netflix Marvel shows did this as well, where they're, I mean, so many jokes at the expense of the costumes and the trappings of the story they're trying to tell. We're still embarrassed of the source material. And I think that that has bled over into the medium, to where we as a culture still equate, if it's a comic, then it must be a four kids dumbed down thing. That's not real literature. That's not real storytelling. Our culture still equates it the way that we did when we were little kids, and the way the media did when we were younger. You know, if it's a comic, it's for kids. And whenever they tried to take themselves seriously, I mean, we all know that cliche. You know, you'd open up the newspaper or click on the article, and usually back in the day, it's when the newspaper, it'd be, you know, Biff, Bam, Pow, comic books grow up. And you're like, oh, again, this title, you know, and it's an article about Mauser, you know, or whatever. And
the shock that comics can be for adults and have a good story and stuff.
For the 10,000th time.
What's that? There's that Futurama joke when it's the Moz company, and she's like, for the 200th year in the row, the future is now.
Yes,
you know, it's like yes,
yep. You know, and comics have been, and I don't say mainstream comics, Marvel, DC, have kind of in their attempts at changing their image, they haven't always made it better. Because I feel like especially sometimes, like, you know, DC in particular for a while, they're pushing so hard. I remember they used to have that catchphrase on their comics in the direct market where the little UPC code would be replaced with DC Comics aren't just for kids anymore. And I always felt like they went so far that they really should have just written DC Comics aren't for kids. Like, they needed to remove a bunch of those words because they were just it feels like the medium is just coming out of the other, like, I feel like the 90s were that awkward teenage period for the comic industry where they were really, really, really wanted to be cool, really wanted to be seen as adult, and decided the way to be, to, the way to do that was to be as aggressively over the top as possible. But in the way a 12-year-old thinks something's cool. And which is not to say that, you know, every generation's got some amazing books that come out of it that stand that test of time. You know, you've got, you know, Hellboy came out of that same period, and that's that's a gold standard comic. And I think now we're settling, a lot of these comics are starting to settle into this, this comfortable adulthood of finally knowing who they are and their identity. Like, a Spider-Man comic can still be fun while still approaching the darker subject matter that they think is really important. DC seems to go through this pattern every 2 years where they like, no, no, we're going to re-embrace the spirit of the classic DC comics, which were lighthearted and hopeful. And then they just go and, but we're having dark crisis right now. It's this roller coaster of rebirth to dark crisis every 2 years because they're desperately trying to find the sense of identity. It's like the medium is still being dragged down by a genre that desperately wants to be seen as the medium. And I'm not saying this from like a position, I'm like, fuck you, superheroes and blah, blah, blah. You can't see them all. There's a lot of superhero comics on that wall behind me. I'm not ragging on any of them, but I do think that there is a little bit of a identity crisis within the industry of what is and isn't adult and what is and isn't. And my book is definitely a weird, you know, fuck you to the idea of being put into a bucket because it's very cartoony visually. I draw cartoony, but I'm also talking about fairly serious topics sometimes and dropping F-bombs when I feel like it. And, you know, I put a little note, I always put a little notation on the cover, contains naughty words. But yeah, that stigma is, oh God, I can ramble like nobody's business.
No, you're good.
The stigma is still there. And I think we hold the stigma against ourselves sometimes as fans too. The outside culture does not bully us the way it used to. You know, I know kids these days that are going to school, they're not getting the crap that we used to get as kids for liking a comic book. Oh, you read comic books. That's not really a thing anymore. These kids are all liking the same characters. They're all still Iron Man fans and all that stuff. But we internalized the bullying, I've discovered. There's no greater bully for your liking of comic books these days than other comic book fans and other genre fans, because God forbid you like something that has not been approved. You know, I've taken to not even talking about my personal opinions on pop culture stuff anymore because I got tired of having my friends laugh at my face for liking a movie they decided the internet told them wasn't good, or a comic or anything like that. We're kind of, it's almost like an absence of culture bullying us. A lot of us are bullying ourselves so that we get to hold on to that sense of identity of the I am the put upon bully. I am the outcast.
Yeah.
You know, it's a weird dynamic. I know I'm accused of doing that, being transgender. Oh, you just want all the negative attention. I really don't. I really would love to be ignored for anything other than that person just coming into the store for sodas.
Yeah.
I am definitely not trolling for negative fucking attention.
What, you're not going to join a sport so you can dominate it? That's why you started making comics, is because you're going to take them from me? How dare you? Because if you're making a comic, I can't. There's only so many passes of people to make comics. Oh. And if one is taken away, you know what I mean? Like, that's just not something that we can do. I don't know what you're doing, D.
Clearly, the man bones of my hands will make me superior, while the estrogen will make my brain write different in a way that dominates the industry. Not like I've been accused of literally transitioning for free publicity.
Yeah, because that would be worth it, and that would be the reason.
That is absolutely those arguments. That's absolutely why I had body parts removed. And get shit when I go to the public restrooms. I did that because I'm really dying for it's a joke in one of the strips. I'm dying for that bleeding cool news article.
Yeah.
I had a lot of people back when I used to live in Florida and found out about it. There were a good number of people that were talking shit about me behind my back that I was only obviously the comics they were working on were clearly flops. I was outselling them. Mm-hmm. And I'm just doing this for the publicity. It's a publicity stunt and it's all bull crap. And I'm like, really? This is how I'm going to try to choose to. Here I am 7 years later on my first major Kickstarter for a call. Yeah, I'm rolling in the secret trans militia army money.
Right. Ugh. Yeah, these made up things that are just to generate anger in people who don't understand it and say to just get angry at like one person. I don't understand it myself, but
people who think that one line in the movie Kindergarten Cop is a science course.
Right. That movie's, yeah, I've heard a lot of like that, why that one showed up all of a sudden in the in crosshairs of people.
Because little Miko Hughes goes, my mommy says that boys have a penis,
that's right,
and girls have a vagina. And people love bumper sticker slogans to be their truth. And
that
it's
makes
like,
sense.
It's, you know, and somebody will scream at you about chromosomes and then you'll be like, okay, but what about these other 29 configurations that you don't know about? Also, what are your chromosomes? Yeah. Because literally, unless you have an obvious problem, no one's had theirs checked. I know this. It's like, hi, yeah. I'm actually transgendered. I think I'm transgender. I just stuttered and made it sound like I did a grammatical error that I got yelled at once. I've done a good degree of research on this. I have talked to many, many professional people who have done far more literal research than my reading things. It's way more fucking complicated.
Yeah.
The little kids.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to have.
A joke in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie is not a science course, nor is it an absolute.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, you said you were helping out with like the marketing for the books and for the Kickstarter, like. I doubt that was like one of your strategies there, right? Like what are the actual strategies that you've been working on to actually get the
D gives me the jokes and I just put them on the page. That's, I don't know. But seriously, I just do like Lori asks me for stuff and I just give it to her. And, sometimes I don't even know what she's going to use them for. So I'm, oftentimes don't have any idea what's going on and I just do what's asked of me. But for this one though, yeah, it's you know, we decided that we were gonna do this and we knew, and Dee did a wonderful job of preparing us all. Like this could get us a lot of flack online and from people. And one of the things that we noticed immediately, we posted the trailer to the Kickstarter on YouTube, and there must be a couple dozen dislikes now. And I think it's hilarious actually, because I'm like, you guys know that you're hate watching this and you're still giving us the views. So you think that you are doing us a disservice by hitting the thumbs down, but actually you're boosting our stuff by watching it and giving it the view in the first place. So, yeah. But that was, you know, that's the worst of it that I've noticed so far. But I know Lori mentioned that there's some idiots on the internet that are giving us some crap. And, and you know, I'm just like, well, whatever, let them be mad. What are you going to do? Can't save them all.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I think Dee was saying there, I think like the, you start getting just like the carpal tunnels from using the block button, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's just, it's all the only thing I've ever done with it. I've just been, I mean, the thing is the flack that I get from stuff is doesn't seem as it would be as personal, right? Like to be as a core of a person as like your comic is close to you, D. So I certainly don't have that sort of nowhere that I'm coming from, like where I'd be like, oh, just block them. You know what I mean? I mean, that is a strategy, right? Like you do have to do that, because if you don't, then you just let people run around in the sandbox and trying to kick people out, right? But anyway, I wanted to say, like, how'd you come up with your rewards system here? Because I know that there's a lot of when I'm coming up with my Kickstarters, there's a lot of whiteboard where we're like, hey, what are the things, like, how did you come up with them, and what are the ones that you're finding that, like, are really successful and people are connecting with?
We definitely have there's that handful, and I'm sure you notice this with your Kickstarters too. There's that handful that people always expect that we'll have. Like, we'll have the inexpensive digital option, and we'll have that standard soft cover, and in this case also hardcover. Like, you can get just the soft cover, just the hardcover, and people expect those. People are starting to expect from Unlikely Heroes, they expect a t-shirt of some kind. We're starting to get the standees. The people cool. are expecting the standees from us now too.
I want the standee.
I want the standee too. I want all of the standees, and I don't know where the hell I would put them, but I will glue them to the ceiling if I have to. I just want all of them. But yeah, like, those are really fun, and I know a couple of people that have gotten all of the ones that we've offered so far, and I asked them, I was like, if you guys want to take a picture of what you did with them and show us, because we really kind of, like, where are you putting these things? And then there's the newer stuff, like, we've done some enamel pins, but this is the first one where the enamel pins are really kind of, they're kind of a big part of it, whereas before it was just like, oh, here's a pin, you know, it was, and these
part of
are
that's
D's
my fault, though.
Art. Yeah, part, because you, yeah, you.
Well, we have a little group chat for the studio where it's me, Sarah, Lori, and Katie, the colorist, Katie Rustin, who's amazing. And we chat about all these things, and so many of the tiers and the reward tiers are based on shit we want. It's at my day job office. I've got a big old pin board that's got a ton of pins on it, because I also collect pins. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
I want pins.
Right.
I mean, there's a weird ego thing, because the pins are cartoons of my own face, and there's a whole dynamic weirdness to doing a comic about yourself when you also have massive imposter syndrome complexes and anxiety issues, because you're just like, you know, you have to both feed your ego and defend yourself from it at the same time, so it doesn't collapse into a fucking black hole. Mm-hmm. But I still want those damn pins.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this came down to what kind of cool stuff would we want? I mean, I know that, you know, you and Lori were able to really, you know, measure the metrics from your past successful Kickstarters, which is great. I don't have the experience with stuff like that. I just know stuff that I like, you know? So I was like, we gotta make sure that the books have, you know, pinups in the back and behind the scenes art, because I love shit like that in my books. I want to see sketches and whatever I can that's behind the scenes stuff, you know, or fan art and, you know, stuff like that. The standee was something, I think it almost became more serious as a real thing because we all laughed at the pun value of a standee.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, you may have noticed if you read the.
I did.
Yeah, there's this. Lori went a little nuts. She came up with almost all of those puns, and there were a couple of them. I was making the Kickstarter graphics, and there was a couple of times I'm like, I think I've just been looking at them too long. Can you tell me what this one means? I don't even understand anymore. What is English? What are words?
Mm-hmm. Suddenly, we're looking at them like trying to figure out people's vanity plates on the road.
Right,
it's a game.
Yeah, I always wonder if people who have those, like, see the people with the scrunched up faces in their rear view, like, what the hell does that say?
I want to get a vanity plate just so I can stare in the rear view mirror and see if it happens,
right? Get a little dash cam for the back, and see, and just that's a YouTube channel. That's got to be a YouTube channel. Somebody's doing already. But I'm a huge fan of, like, the puns for reward levels. That's wonderful. It's a great looking Kickstarter too. Like, that's another thing that people look for, right? Like it shows if the Kickstarter shows a clarity of thought there and a clarity of like design and organization, stuff like that, it's a lot better chance that you have like a quality product coming out with it, right?
Yeah, well, thank you. It's that's a lot of Lori. She has done the legwork, you know, trial and error and trying to see what works and what doesn't over, gosh, like, I mean, she's got to be closing in on 10 years of doing Unlikely mm-hmm. Heroes stuff now. And wow. And I'm, because I'm sitting here thinking, I think I've been with 8 years with Unlikely Heroes. So she's been doing that from pretty much as soon as she stepped into the studio, she was doing the stuff. And, you know, like I said, just she was throwing stuff on the wall and seeing what stuck. And now mm-hmm. we have that handful of core stuff that we know everybody always wants. Right. And like with we can take the chance on the pins because we know pins are popular because there are mm-hmm. a million people like Dee and you that mm-hmm. love pins. I mean, I love pins. I don't collect them because I am already quite the pack rat and I have too many collections of stuff as it is. Mm-hmm. But I love looking at them, and so like we could take those pins and we can make them into like let's see how pins do on this Kickstarter, because if like we're not, it's not a huge risk anymore because we already know that we're going to have these core things that people will love to have, and mm-hmm. we can see how the pins do on this because. Well, I know. I guess I'm assuming. I'm not 100% sure that you have a lot of pin loving fans out there. I assume you have plenty of pin loving fans, but
I never know. I have no idea.
And that is fair. I mean, that's not something that comes up in just a regular conversation with a stranger. So
no, I mean, when I get a new pin and put it on my pin, like I got two Coraline pins for Christmas. And they went on my, so I take pictures and I put them. So I mean, I have friends that are like, oh, those mm-hmm. are awesome.
Yeah. So but, you know, yeah, the people that like those pictures, at least they're pin fans, right?
Yep.
But yeah, it seems like there's things like if we don't know if it's going to be a thing, we can put just one of those what's the word? Like the one of the unknown products that we haven't done before or that we haven't done much, we can stick mm-hmm. those onto a campaign with all the other stuff that we know everybody will like, and then we can see what happens. And if the people don't like them, we didn't ruin our whole campaign on it. And, sure. And so that's I don't know if that's like that's Lori's conscious thought on it or if she just
sure.
magically knows what people are going to want for each campaign, because it kind of is starting to feel like that because she's mm-hmm. just gotten very, very in tune with what works and what doesn't work with Kickstarter.
That's pretty great.
It's kind of scary, a Kickstarter, really.
Yeah, having a Kickstarter guru there with you is pretty great, because it is a mysterious box. You never know sometimes what's gonna hit and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
Dee, I wanted to ask you about comic book conventions. I'm a big fan of comic cons, and mm-hmm. You've been to a ton. I think you were saying beforehand. Have you been to a convention with this content yet? I know this is like the first one of the print version, but have you been
some smaller shows? There's the Erie Library Comic Con. Not really any major shows. Well, a couple. What am I talking about? I premiered it at MegaCon in 2017 in Florida. And it did really, really well there. I was surprised at how well it did, but we sold out of a lot of our stock of the first issue, because I've done black and white prints as regular issues. Okay. And okay. I mostly sell them online. They don't really sell all that well, because they sell great in person at conventions. I don't push things well online. It's one of the reasons I'm super happy to be working with the studio of people who know how this stuff works. Mm-hmm. You know, I still do the floppies, but it's mostly for my personals. I love having them.
Oh, sure.
I'm like, ooh, look, I got a new issue of my comic.
Yeah. Well, you got to get a couple CGC'd too, right? Like, you got to have
I don't bother with that.
You got to do one or two. No. You got to have them on your shelf there.
Nah.
So one of these days when we got to put it in the Library of Congress, we need a pristine copy.
Oh, yeah. No, it's never going to happen.
Not with that attitude.
No.
You just one of these days, Lori's just going to send us a message in the group chat and be like, hey, guess what? Because she does a lot of that shit, and she just does it and doesn't say anything until after it's been, after we've got the positive news that we wanted.
Well, if we need a pristine copy, I'll just go back to the printer and make a new one.
There you go.
Maybe your singles won't end up in there, but I would not be surprised if that kind of thing doesn't happen with the volume one and any future volumes.
Who knows? I love doing conventions. When we moved up here to Pennsylvania in 2015, and so we've been here for a few years now, and my brain just completely froze. I haven't been to near as many conventions as I would like to. I'm looking into a couple for this summer that I want to go to. And I really want to get, I was finally getting ready to get back into the convention game in late 2019, to tell you, when you can figure out why that didn't happen.
Yeah.
All the shows got canceled. And I've not done any shows post COVID that I can remember. I've been to a couple, like just as a guest to see how it was like. Mm-hmm. And like for some of the local shows, we'll drive out and go for the day to see whether or not we think it'll be a good show. Mm-hmm. For us. Cause it's also, this is something I actually discovered in the early 2000s when I was doing my, my first webcomic Dandy and Company, which was very much a, like it was like Peanuts meets Looney Tunes comic strip. You know, funny talking animals and slapstick comedy. And back then, it's kind of funny. I'd almost get more shitty glares and stink eye from people at a regular comic book convention with a humor book with funny cartoon animals as I do now just going into Walmart as a woman. I used to get that. Like, people would walk by, look at me, look at my books on the table and sneer at me. I'd have people tell me those aren't real comics. And, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, if I put my talking dog in spandex and have him, shoot a fireball, that's somehow more mature. Please explain this to me. So I'm used to a certain degree of dismissiveness at some shows. And so I'm still looking around. I'm like trying to figure out what shows I think would be a better fit for the material. Because it isn't traditional, it's much more of an indie underground style book in that regard. Visually, it doesn't look like that. Like, it's stylistically, I try to make them look as nice as possible, but it's cartoony art. It's, it's slice of life stuff. It's not your standard mainstream comic of what is considered mainstream American comic, but that's changing too. We're having a lot more things that are crossing into the mainstream. People are starting to pay attention to things like, what are these, Raina Tegelmeyer's comics that like are selling in the millions, the ones that put, oh, there aren't real comics. I check, I flip through it. It's sequential stories, little panels, and the things happen in the panels. It's a real comic, and it's outselling everything Marvel, her graphic novels, because they get sold in Walmarts and all that stuff, are outselling everything Marvel and DC does put together. There's a lot of stuff like that from Webtoon. The Lore Olympus sells like crazy. They're on their third print volume. That's one of the reasons why, and it's been a hard sell for a lot of people because the industry likes to pretend it doesn't exist. But, the manga explosion, it's...
Oh, sure.
Books that cover genres that American comics refuse to or don't want to, at least the mainstream books. But now we've got, Image started very much as like that, the epitome of that awkward teenage phase I was talking about, where it's, it was the hyper-aggressive, hyper-masculine, action movies on paper. And, I bought all of them. I loved them. I'm not shitting on any of them, but it is definitely an awkward teenage phase proportionately to the stuff they're doing now. Where there's no limit on what kind of a book you're going to get from, say, an Image Comics or Dark Horse or some of these other publishers that are out there producing, these amazing things. Boom does, amazing stuff. And they're all over the map in terms of genre and all that stuff. And I love that we're in that now. And, you know, maybe the bigger this stuff gets, the maybe Finding D will have a find a better or bigger audience at some of these other conventions, because people are getting used to these different kinds of books that aren't this, you know, and a lot of them is stuff that's translating also, obviously, you know, through TV and the Netflix series. So you've got things like Umbrella Academy and Lock and Key, and people are realizing now, you know, comics aren't just those mediums. It's, I always remember there's that one, what was it? There's A History of Violence, and the one with Tom Hanks where he was the monster.
Oh, Road to Perdition.
Road to Perdition. You tell people those are comic book movies.
Mm-hmm.
Or Whiteout. Mm-hmm. That's a comic book movie, you know. Some of them are kind of obvious. Like, okay, no one's going to have a hard time believing Scott Pilgrim is a comic book movie. But mm-hmm. a lot of people don't know Ghost World was.
Mm-hmm.
These are all comic book movies. They're adaptations of comic books. Just because, you know, it's that there's that, you know, there's the thing I remember in Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics, or, you know, a whole chapter trying to point out to people the medium is not the genre is not the medium.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping, you can find, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. I've said this a million times. Like, if you don't like comics, it's just because you haven't found the one you like yet. There's any kind of comic you could want. Yeah, you know what I mean? Literally.
There's a documentary. It's called Stripped. Dave Kellett is one of the creators of it. He's a comic strip artist who does a strip called Sheldon and another one called Drive. Really funny comic. And he co-directed, and I'm blanking on the name of the other director, and I apologize, like they're watching. I love this, but anytime I need creative inspiration, I slip the DVD in, and it's kind of about comic strips in general. And it focuses on a lot of things like the, you know, the fall of newspapers and how that's affected the industry. But there's this one scene that I always remember is very funny. It was pointing out how people, and somebody was saying how there's always somebody that'll say, well, I don't really like comics, but I liked your comic. And then the cartoonist mm-hmm. being asked, well, then congratulations, you like comics. But mm-hmm. it's like, you know, but for decades, comics in America have only been superheroes. So people see that and say, I don't like comics because they didn't like superheroes or they grew out of Archie.
Mm-hmm.
And that, well, I don't like comics because they don't real. And it's like, and they did this graphic. It was such a cute cartoon where it's like a person standing in front of a movie theater and there's 10 marquees and it's love. Love the movie, love 2, love 3D, you know, everything. If everything is a romance movie and you just don't happen to like romance movies, does that mean you don't like movies? Mm-hmm. You know, and the character's walking out, I guess I don't like movies, because every movie mm-hmm. was the same exact thing. And it's been mm-hmm. like that with comics, I think. If everything is a superhero comic, and again, nothing against them, I love them.
Sure.
I always feel the need to preface things like this because I don't want people mm-hmm. to be like, ah, she's bitching and pissing all over this stuff. Oh, I'm just saying that the medium is not the genre.
Mm-hmm.
By the metrics that, you know, if a comic must be a superhero comic, then most of our books aren't comics.
Exactly.
Because most of our books are not superheroes. We have one that's got superpowered people, but I wouldn't call them heroes. But like original super is the only one that's superheroes, and they're not even good at it. But that would be the only comic that we have if we are defining our stuff by that very strict rule, which
yeah.
is, like you said, is just not accurate.
No, there's all kinds of comics out there, you know, and I'm happy to be. I'm happy to say if I'm difficult to categorize in that regard, mm-hmm. I'll wear that as a badge of pride, you know?
Oh, no, that's awesome. The people who like superhero comics are well serviced. They are taken care of.
Yeah, they
every
are.
Day, thousands of comics every Wednesday, their favorite books come out. I like the fact that, like, if someone is transitioning or is having dysphoria or something like that, discovers your comic and then realizes, oh, hang on, this is something that I'm that I connect to, and it's not a superhero. There's people who have that epiphany every day too, yep. Right? They'll come into the medium, and then they're like, oh, and then it's like turning on a light in the room when you've been using the flashlight, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, there's this whole world of things, and then you can, and there's hundreds of these. You could have those bookshelves, like you said, there's superhero books back there too, but you could have a whole shelf of that is, like you said, a one genre thing. Whatever your interest is too, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. What you guys have been doing, and sorry, I use guys as the non-gendered version of this. There's still weeds in my whiskers in my vernacular that I'm trying to shave off here, but
no worries.
there's the, what you all have been doing is, publishing on your own. Nobody gave you permission to make these books, right? No, you didn't have to go to Marvel and convince an editor and tell somebody, you know, we think we're going to move this many units, and they're going to be like, wow, you know, we're not going to be able to get that into here and stuff, blah, 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 blah. You're just going straight to your consumer, people who want to, who like and support you, and like and support your message, whatever connection they're making with you. And then they just hand you the dollars, and then you don't have to share them with anybody either. And I think that's just a great thing that's a possibility in publishing comics today.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing is, like, crowdfunding online has really made it possible for a lot of people to do that when they've had this amazing idea that's been rattling around in their brain for years or decades, and they didn't have the money to make it happen. And now suddenly there's this option here. You don't have to be a millionaire in order to create your own comic or create your own anything. You mm-hmm. can ask, you can just make a genuine, well, not always genuine, I guess, but like you can make a plea to the whole world and say, hey, mm-hmm. I had this idea. Will you help me make it happen by giving me money? Mm-hmm. And, you know, then we're like, in exchange for that, I'm going to give you stuff. So, and that's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
It cuts out both the proverbial middleman. It cuts out the middleman too, because, you know, just in case, I mean, I don't have a good joke for that. It cuts out the middleman, but it also cuts out the gatekeepers. Mm. It cuts mm-hmm. out, you know, and shock of shocks, I'm not a fan of gatekeepers and people telling me what I am and I'm not. Mm-hmm. So I kind of love that, you know, the internet, you know, back in the late 90s and early 2000s for a lot of people like me was like this, wait a minute, I can get my comics out to the world without having to have a newspaper syndicate pick me up or have a publisher either disregard me entirely or insist on owning the rights to my material, mm-hmm. or saying, I was trying to break into comics in the early 90s. I was just out mm-hmm. of high school, and I was busting my butt. I was doing my samples for Marvel and DC, and I was actually doing really good with Marvel. I had an editor that I was talking to. I was getting direct feedback within days of sending out a package. Notes, do this, change that, blah, blah, blah. You're getting there. This is getting much better. If you do this and do this and do that, and I'd send a new packet and a new packet and a new packet. And then I actually saw one of the scripts that they were sending me for an example. And I'm like, this is a book that exists. They didn't white out the issue number. I went out and bought it. And I'm like, oh, wow, the actual printed issue sucks. Mm. Why was mm-hmm. mine getting nitpicked like that? And I just really, you know, it was one of those things you're like, I was starting to hate it. And I'm like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. I'm dreading working on a comic. Mm-hmm. I'm dreading the idea of the thing I've wanted to do my entire life. And it was at that point where I just kind of backed off and I was like, okay, find your own way in the door. Find your own way to do what you want to do and have it be fun. And yeah, mm-hmm. to this day, I'm still a graphic designer. It's what I did for a living then. It's what I do for a living to make pay the bills now. But it enables me to do something that no one else was going to pay me to do, which is tell the story that I want to tell my own way. And like even within the industry of, you know, comics that are about the transgender experience, you know, There's no other one out there that's telling it my way, the way I wanted to do it. I wanted to tell it as a comic strip. I wanted to tell it as a humor comic strip, not one that every panel ends on a forlorn expression of ennui. And there's a lot of those. I didn't want it to be the slice of life comic that makes you want to, you know, end your slice of life. It's so bleak. There's a lot of things out there, and I'm not pissing on any of the people that are choosing to tell their stories their way, because that's their stories told their way, and that's fantastic. Yeah. The world has room for all of that, you know. Yep. You were saying earlier, and I know I'm all over the place, about how my comic might be something that somebody sees who really needs that in their life, you know. And I've had people tell me that. I mean, straight up, I've had people message me and be like, you know, I didn't, you know, who have come out because of my comic, or who have learned to accept these things about themselves, or learned how to deal with things better. Who's like, I did what Cartoon D did, and it's getting a little easier for me. And it's like, you know, that's something that's kind of sometimes hard to deal with, because it's weighty. It's, you know, very strong. Hello? I'm sorry, I thought I heard someone knocking. I got noise. These are the noise canceling headphones, so I can never tell what I'm hearing. You know, and maybe for another creator, they'll pick up my book and be like, oh, wait, you can just do this. You can tell this deep and personal story in weekly webcomics and tell these stories that way. I mean, that's, you know, when I was in high school, I discovered Kyle Baker's Why I Hate Saturn, which is a book I recommend to anybody. It's brilliant. And I'd never seen anything like that before. That it wasn't Archie, and it wasn't, but it was humor. It was a funny comic, and it was about a misanthropic alcoholic writer. And I'm like, oh, that's what I want to be when I grow up. You know, and I fell in love with that book, and now anything Kyle Baker does, I'll check that out, because it's always something different. It's always something like, whoa, didn't see that coming. My current favorite comic is it's over now. It's called Giant Days from John Allison and Max Sarin. I think that book is brilliant. It blows my mind how much I love it, and it's barely ever about anything. It's just relationships of four girls in the UK at university who become besties. And I absolutely adore that, and I'll follow those creators on anything they do. And they got a new one coming out from Dark Horse I'm super excited about. Comics can be, and the new comic, it's going to be a mystery. It's a whodunit comic. That's nice. One of my favorite genres, and I'm like, oh yay, now we're going to get whodunit comics.
So it's not a comic, because there's no superheroes.
No, you're right, it's not a comic. Well, that's just like, for how long it was when people say it's a comic, but it's not funny. But because it has the word comic in it, they think it means it's going to be funny.
Yeah, that was a long time. When I worked at the comic book store in the early 90s, that was always the thing. It was like, oh, I didn't know it couldn't be Archie or Woody Woodpecker or, you know, Mickey Mouse. That's all I knew from comics. And they're like, and there was already that jump over to like, oh, it could be a superhero, which was like, the superhero has been, that was what started. It was in the 30s. You know what I mean? That was how long have you not checked this out? But I also got to remember a lot of times, like, I'm in Utah, right, which is a literal and a figurative desert, and the comics didn't make it out this way specifically in the 40s and the 50s and stuff like that. It just didn't get here. So there is still a lot of culture that's moving over to understanding, like, what are the comics capable of, and what are the comic book movies capable of?
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, we had Wonder Woman came out, and that's the premier, you know, female-led superhero comic, right? And we got a movie of her 5 years ago. You know what I mean? And it's like, and still waiting for a good one. Yeah, take that. Anyway, they weren't for me. Let me say it that way. But anyway, like, what is it going to take to get to an anti-hero movie that, like, all the anti-hero comics that they have? What is it going to take then to bleed over into even more genre-defying stuff that has been mainstays in the comics for years and years, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And they're just still going to move over into the movies. There's just so much of this bleed that's going over. And then with what's going on in the culture now, how much, what's something maybe that would have come out 10 years ago is going to get a whole bunch of cultural backlash now because people are making up anger about it, right? So it's just interesting to look at all this. It's a giant, big, beautiful mess, really.
Mm-hmm. People but, look for excuses to get mad anymore, I swear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you're not hurting anybody and you're making yourself happy, then other people need to just sit down and shut up. Just yeah. Don't worry about it. I put video clips, little like the YouTube shorts. I put clips up of my freaking cats. Like they're like 10 to 15 seconds. And I regularly have people tell me that I'm abusing my cats. And it's like, do you have nothing better to do that you decided to stop and take 5 minutes out of your day for this? And yeah. Geez, I hope that you had a better day than you were having when you made that comment.
I've had that reaction to the strips too. Sarah and I have talked about this at length because people really do like to just make judgments on things and make these decisions about you based on next to no information. And yeah, a lot of people just need to be like, calm the fuck down. Not everything is a hill to die on. Not everyone is your new enemy. Not everyone does things the same way you do them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get that. I've gotten negative messages from other transgender women who don't like the way I trans. You know,
is there a wrong way to do that? I didn't know that there was a wrong way to do that.
I'm not a real comic.
Unless you are literally stealing a different woman's skin and wearing it as your own, I feel like there's not a wrong way to do that.
No, and that move, wow. that way has been well covered.
Yeah.
Multiple movies have covered that way.
Yes. Man, that is awesome. So we're getting to the end of the hour here. I wanted to make sure that everybody knows where to find everything, everything from the Kickstarter and for all the other comics that are being published here. And so, Finding D right now, Volume 1. If you hit Kickstarter and just search for Finding D, you'll find it there. All sorts of really cool rewards that you can back on there. At the time of this recording, it still has 17 days to go. So this should go up pretty quickly. So hopefully, let people know that you heard this on the Lane Urich Report. When you go back at the highest level, let's get like 5 or 6 people to come in at the highest level and get the standees.
But that would be amazing.
Where can people find the weekly strip and the other books that are being published?
Well, the weekly comic strip can be read at findingd.com or findingdcomic.com. Every Wednesday, there's a new comic strip in black and white because the color is exclusive for our Kickstarter.
Nice.
For our Kickstarter, we also have a short link that you can, if you want to just type in uhstudios.com/kickit2, and that's the number 2, and that'll take you straight to Finding D's page. And if you want to look at any of our other comics, you can just go to uhstudios.com with no other extensions, and that should pop it right up to... I think it pops it right to the comics at the moment. So you can go check those out. And we are also on Facebook at UH Studios. We are on Twitter at UH Studios. We are on Instagram at UH Studios Official, I think. But yeah, we're pretty much UH Studios everywhere. So if we have an account on that platform, then that's probably what you should check.
Awesome. Yeah, make sure that you go and support these creators. They're doing their own thing, but it only works if there's people that come and support it. So make sure that you have your voice heard supporting indie comics, supporting these awesome creators. You want to support this podcast. It is over at thecomicbookpodcast.com. Title of the show is The World's Greatest Comic Book Podcast, with the regulars J.C. Carter and J.M. Bell, good, dear friends of mine. J.C. Carter also has his Kickstarter that's live at the time of this recording as well. If you're gonna back two Kickstarters, because you're gonna back Finding D, and you're gonna go find Shaolin Nun from J.C. Carter, and then at some point you're also gonna find from Validity Studios, you're gonna find the 10-year anniversary for the Salt City Strangers will be coming out with a collected version of The Gull, and later in the year for our colored version of Ruthless. So
fabulous. Awesome. I'm back for Shaolin Nun.
Yes, everyone should. And for Finding D.
Super cool. Yeah. And yes. That was actually Lori introducing me by showing me something she was working on.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, it's been a pleasure. I'm so excited. I will have you back after the success of the Kickstarter. You can tell us about how the rollout goes and how it's getting received when you're back at conventions. And we'll continue this conversation in another time. But thanks a lot for hanging out with me and with all the listeners. And I hope you have a great rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes. Of course.